Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Ittinamine Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyare Shatarine Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva cha Patitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Deving Sarasatim Vyasa Tato Jayamudiraye Nashta Prayeshava Vadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 16, a description of Jambudvipa. And we're reading the last four verses, actually, as I understand. And we have the last of these written on the board. This chapter is not in verse form in Sanskrit, it's in prose form. So the rhythmic chanting of the verses is not there because they're not verses. It's prose. So what to do? Maybe I'll just read... Let me read verse 26, transliteration, and then we'll work our way through like that. Kuranga kurara kushumba vaikanka trikuta shishira patanga ruchaka nishadha shinivasa kapila shanka vaidurya Jarudhi hangsa rishabha naga kalanjara naradadayo. That was all one samasa, by the way. That was all one word. Vimshati girayo mero karnikaya iva kesharabhuta muladeshe parita upaklittaha. There are other mountains beautifully arranged around the foot of Mount Meru, like the filaments around the whorl of a lotus flower. Their names are Kuranga, Kurara, Kusumbha, Vaikanka, Trikuta, Shishira, Patanga, Ruchaka, Nishada, Sinivasa. Kapila, Shankha, Vaidurya, Jarudhi, Hansa, Rishava, Naga, Kalanjara, and Narada. So you've all memorized those names, I hope. The next verse, I won't read the Sanskrit because it's long. Translation. On the eastern side of Sumeru Mountain are two mountains named Jatara and Devakuta, which extend to the north and south for 18,000 yojanas, 144,000 miles. Similarly, on the western side of Sumeru are two mountains named Pavana and Pariyatra, which also extend north and south for the same distance. On the southern side of Sumeru are two mountains named Kailasa and Karavira, which extend east and west for 18,000 yojanas. And on the northern side of Sumeru, extending for the same distance, east and west, are two mountains named Trishringa and Makara. The width and height of all these mountains is 2,000 yojanas, 16,000 miles. Sumeru, a mountain of solid gold, shining as brilliantly as fire, is surrounded by these eight mountains. So keep this picture in your mind. In the middle of the summit of Meru is the township of Lord Brahma. Each of its four sides is calculated to extend for 10 million yojanas. How many miles? No. 10 million. 80 million miles. Right. It is made entirely of gold, and therefore learned scholars and sages call it Shatakumbhi. Shatakumbhi. Okay, then we come to this verse, which is written, number 29. Tam anuparito lokapalanam ashtanam yatadisham yatarupam turiyamanena puroshtav. No. Puroshtav upaklupta. All right. Shall we do the word for word just for tradition's sake? Tam, that great township named Brahmapuri. Anuparita, surrounding. Lokapalanam, of the governors of the planets. Ashtanam, eight. Yathadisham, according to the directions. Yatharupam, in exact conformity with the township of Brahmapuri. Turiyamanina, by measurement only 1/4. Pura, townships. Ashtau, eight. Upaklupta, situated. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Surrounding Brahmapuri in all directions are the residences of the eight principal governors of the planetary systems, beginning with King Indra. These abodes are similar to Brahmapuri, but are 1/4 the size. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms that the townships of Lord Brahma and the eight subordinate governors of the planetary systems, beginning with Indra, are mentioned in other Puranas. And he quotes, he doesn't say which Purana, Merao Navapurani Syur Manovatyamaravati Tejovati Sangyamani Tata Krishnangana Para Shradhavati Gandhavati Tata Chanya Mahodaya Yashovati Cha Brahmendra Bahyadinam Yatakramam. Brahma's township is known as Manavati. And those of his assistants, such as Indra and Agni, are known as Amaravati, Tejovati, Sangyamani, Krishnangana, Shadhavati, Gandhavati, Madhodaya, and Yashovati. Brahmapuri is situated in the middle, and the other eight puris, not the kind you eat, and the other eight puris surround it in all directions. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 16th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of Jambudvip. And quite a description it has been. Some might think, upon reading such apparently fantastic description of the universe or part of the universe, that whoever wrote it must have been deeply influenced by D-lysergic acid dithalamide. But that's not the case. We understand from the beginning of this description, it's Shuka, known as Shukadeva, Shukadeva Goswami, who is the most austere of ascetics. And he tells us in the beginning, I'm just telling you what I've heard. We might be suspicious. So where did he get that from? Well, apparently he got it from Vyasa. And so on. We may wonder also, what does this description have to do with reality? It's nothing like what I see, hear, smell, or taste. It's pretty fantastic. The recommendation, one recommendation for how to read these chapters, is to enjoy them, to relish a description of something which is indeed beyond our comprehension, beyond our grasp, unless, according to the main commentary on the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, there's a section in the Yoga Sutras. Of course, it's largely describing what we call Ashtanga Yoga, one aspect of which is concentration. What is it? Dharana, right? Dhyana, Dharana. I never know which is first. One of those, concentration. And then it gives a series of objects that you may choose from to concentrate on as part of your yoga practice. This is so one of them is the navel. We've all heard about navel gazing. It all comes from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. You can also concentrate on other parts of your own body. And with the perfection of the practice of this concentration come different results. And one of the practices is you can concentrate on the Susumna column, more or less the backbone. And the result of of this concentration is that one can then comprehend the form of the universe. One can understand, in other words, fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you want to really understand what's going on here, that's the tip from Patanjali. Meditate on your backbone, which is corresponding with the Milky Way. What we call the Milky Way is the Sushumna column of this cosmos. The description that we get here, Shishi Radha Gopina Ki Jai, is in many respects a mandala. Indeed, there is a description of Bhu Mandala. Mandala means a flat, round area, space. Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3 has described time. It has indicated how to understand times in different measures. And now in Canto 5 we're getting space, description of space within the cosmos. And it turns out that much of this is describing a mode of meditation, just like so many forms called yantras are forms of meditation. In the Brahma Samhita, the very beginning, second verse, and then some verses following that, is describing a yantra. As it turns out, it's describing the spiritual world. And who is speaking that Brahma Samhita? Lord Brahma. And what has Lord Brahma been doing prior to his speaking the Brahma Samhita? Yeah, he's been doing a lot of nothing. He's been sitting on top of a lotus flower and, just blowing with the breeze, shooting the breeze, we say. He's been meditating. He's been practicing tapa as advised to him. And as a result of this tapa, he has this revelation. He has a revelation which is together with, it's a kind of visual revelation, and it's also an audio revelation. He hears, what does he hear? He heard tapa before. Yes, that was a revelation, true. And then he followed that instruction, or that hint. It wasn't really, instruction, okay. But usually instruction means like do tapa. But all he heard was tapa. And he kind of thought, maybe that's what I should do. Okay. So that was revealed. And then flute. Ah, just any old flute. Krishna's flute. And from hearing Krishna's flute, what did he then understand? He understood, he heard a mantra. And that mantra is described in Brahma Samhita. And he also understood or saw the spiritual world. And that is what he describes in his prayers, beginning Chintamani Prakara Satmasu Kalpa Vriksha Laksha Riteshu Surabhi Rabhi Palayantam Lakshmi Sahasrashata Sambrahma Sevyamanam, then Govindamani Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. He's worshipping the Lord and he is praising, he is describing his abode. He's also describing the material world. And he is hinting at the relation between the two. How do you get from the one to the other? Sometimes he says it's actually quite easy. Advaitam achutam anadam anantarupam adhyam purana purisham navayovanam cha vedeshu dulabam. Very difficult. Adurlabam atmabhakto. It's very difficult to get there through the Veda. Very easy to get there if you practice bhakti. Atmabhakto, for the devotee of the self. But then the next verse, what does he say? Pantastu koti shatavatsara sampragamyo vayoratapi manaso munipungavanam. The munipungavas. Munipungu. The best of the munis. What do they do? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that they drill with the respiration. I always wonder what that means, drilling the respiration. I always tried to picture, you know, a drilling. But it just occurred to me this morning, the word drill in English has another meaning, which is to practice. Yeah. You all knew that. How come nobody told me? So, in other words, practicing pranayama, vayo ata api. So, going at the speed of the wind, which actually in this case means the breathing of pranayama. In other words, practicing yoga. Or the speed of the mind, which refers to the jnani who is doing a meditation of a kind of process of elimination, not this, not that, not anything. That is what I am after. Na iti. Neti, neti. Pantastu koti shatavatsara sampragamyo. One can go on doing those things for ever so long, so many years, so many thousands, millions of years. And then what? Vayora tapi manaso manipungavanam. So pi asti yat prapadasimni. Prapadasimni, at the border of the toes of the Lord, they may come. Or then again, they may not come. They may get close, but not quite. So to get there, to get to that spiritual world from the material world is not easy for anyone who tries to do anything other than bhakti. But for the bhakta, it is a durlabha, very easy. Now, we may wonder how to, if it's so easy to attain the spiritual world by bhakti, why is it that we cannot grasp what's being described in this fifth canto, this world as described in the fifth canto, in our practice of bhakti? Yesterday we heard Prahladananda Maharaj pointing out that the process is hearing, that hearing is realization. And we may think, well, I've been hearing Bhagavatam for quite a while now, and well, as he was pointing out, we're still working on square one. I am not this body. So to get to other things is a process. It is not there. So then the question is, are we hearing? If hearing equals knowing, then are we hearing? And then the question is, what does it mean to hear in such a way that one knows? As Shukadeva Goswami has heard, and he is simply repeating. How do we understand this process? By practice, by drilling, but not by drilling the pranayama, but rather by practicing the process of bhakti yoga. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that the Srimad Bhagavatam can be understood, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam can be understood in terms of three principles. What are they? Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So what might we take as this description of Jambudvipa? How would you categorize Sambandha? What is Sambandha? Connection, okay. And what is Abhideya? Practice, okay. And what is Prayojana? Huh? The goal? The fruit? Did you say fruit? The fruit. In this chapter, there is a lot of mention of fruit, isn't there? What is it? Giant mangoes the size of what? Elephants? And when they drop, what happens? They create rivers, and what happens to the river of the mango juice? Creates gold. You just mix it with some mud from that river. I forget the name. Which river? One of these rivers. And you just add sunlight, and there you have it. Gold. Yes, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. Some, you may say this is Sambandha. It's about relationship. It's about knowing what is... It's information. A lot of lists here, a lot of names, places... which, incidentally, all of this description is very much like other descriptions in other Puranas, and not only in other Puranas, but also in other traditions. Buddhists and Jains also describe the universe in a similar way. Yes, it's Sambandha, but I would suggest it's more than that. I would suggest it's also Abhideya, because... Okay, let's picture the scene. There's Parikshit Maharaj. What is he doing? He's hearing. And he's hearing what? Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's hearing it nonstop. Day and night. This is his Abhideya. And Shukadeva Goswami is telling him all of these things. We may say, what is this going to help him at the moment of death? It's helping him because it's preparing him to understand what this world is in relation to the spiritual world. And both of them, one is a reflection of the other. So, Lord Brahma is describing the spiritual world as a mandala, as a yantra. It has four sides, it has, and then it has a hexagon, six sides, which in Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's translation is having the 18 syllables of the Gopala mantra, which those who are second initiated chant three times a day, the sixth mantra. That mantra is situated there. So that is then the spiritual world. The material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So it's also a mandala. It's also a yantra. And what do you do with yantras? You meditate on them. So all of this description of Jambudvip is a meditation. One can practice using the word drill. You can drill. You can memorize, if you like, this description of Jambudvip. And in this way, you are doing what? Well, one thing you're doing is controlling the mind. You are envisioning this higher vision of this material world as creation of the Supreme Lord. And this is actually much easier to do than to remember that Krishna is the creator of the junky world that we perceive. The cities of today, we've just read here, are situated very nicely in a pattern of eight around one central city, which is called Brahmapuri. So we can picture that. We can picture the central mountain, Sumeru, which is however many yojanas high. I don't remember. It's very high. A few days ago, I was in central China. I'm still recovering from the trek. We took up one mountain. We went to a place called Wudongshan, which is central China. It's a kind of headquarters of Taoism. There are many Taoist temples there. In Taoism, there are lots of what we might call demigods or celestials, sages who, by their austerities in these freezing cold mountains, you've seen pictures, you've seen paintings, Chinese paintings of sort of wild, craggy mountains, right, with clouds, you know, floating through, right? You've seen that. No? So that's where we were, up in those craggy mountains. We came to the very top of this Wudongshan. Shan means mountain, where was a little shrine for one of these Taoist celestials who was a prince, so the story goes, who was practicing meditation for so many years by himself up there and attained perfection. And having attained perfection, he became a kind of demigod, kind of divinity. So the Taoists are pursuing this kind of higher vision, this higher knowledge by their practices of seeking harmony. They want to perfectly balance everything of the elements. And so they are doing their drills, so to speak. They're doing their Tai Chi and so on. Hoping eventually to attain that kind of perfection. Anyway, those mountains, that was only 1,600 meters high. Here we have thousands, millions of miles high. One can meditate on that as a way to stretch the mind. In this world, our minds tend to become accustomed to a kind of limitations. There's that expression in Spanish. Well, I don't know if that fits. Cuadrado. In German, they say klein kariert, seeing everything in little squares, little tiny squares, seeing everything as fitting into some little pattern. And therefore, in other words, thinking small. The sages, the acharyas, are inviting us to think big. And so by describing Jambudvip in this way, They are inviting us to meditate on this form as a yantra, as a mandala, and then seeing oneself as a servant of those servants in this mandala, who are also described in another chapter on each of the varshas. What are the residents doing? They're offering prayers to the Lord in different forms. So by practicing this meditation on this form, then we are practicing a preparation for meditating on Krishna, who is in Goloka Vrindavan, which is also a yantra. And within this yantra, in the center of the whirl, who is there? Who is in the center? Radha and Krishna. And what are Radha and Krishna doing? Having their pastimes, they're dancing the rasa dance. And what is the rasa dance? Where is the rasa dance? What is the form of the rasa dance? It's a mandala. Yes. So that is the rasa mandala. Hare Krishna. We have a rasa mandala, Prabhu. Kijai. And so from that rasa mandala, we have a reflection as described in fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, a rough reflection. But in this rough reflection, this obscured reflection, what is going on? The devotees are worshiping the Lord. We, meditating on those devotees, are also practicing the same thing, worshiping. In the practice of worship, what is one doing? Actually, in the full process of worshiping the deity, first of all, you establish a mandala. And in the mandala, you place a mantra, and you place the Lord on the mantra, on the bija. And then you have, in meditation at least, the different associates of the Lord around the deity. So what are we doing here in this material world? We're doing exactly what one does up there in the spiritual world. That's what Narottam Das Thakur is praying in his some of his songs. He is imagining himself. He's praying to the Lord, when will that day be mine when I will be offering you such service as your eternal associates are doing? The gopis are waving chamara, they're offering incense, and so on and so forth. Those things which we do here, that is what is going on there. So what's being described here in the description of Jambudvip is a kind of mesocosm. That's not what I wanted to say. It's a macrocosm. And the mesocosm is the temple. The temple in South India, you'll see the temples are shaped like a mountain. They are sort of imitations of Mount Meru. They'll have four sides, and everything will be situated in similar ways as is described here. So that's the mesocosm. The macrocosm is described here in Bhagavatam. And then the individual, each devotee, we each have our bodies, which we are learning that we are not. But while we have these bodies, what are they? They are locations of, they're the, what is in the center of the body is the heart, the consciousness. And in the center of the consciousness, there's also a mandala. We can meditate on the Lord present in the mandala of the heart. And what do we do in our meditation of seeing the Lord there? We chant. We chant the Lord's names. And that chanting is the perfection of our service. But even in this perfection of our service, we are thinking, I have no attraction. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarvi shaktis tatrarpita niyamitas marane nakala. Unlimited shakti is there in the holy names. Etadrishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi. And you're so merciful, O Lord. You're giving me all of this. But durdaivam idrishami hajani na anuraga. I don't have any attraction. Why? Because durdaivam, I'm unfortunate. How to become fortunate? Give up reluctance. The acharyas say that we are here in this world due to reluctance to serve the Lord. You know this word, reluctance? Reluctant. Sort of like hesitation. There we were. Well, according to one theory, there we were in the spiritual world. But then, at one moment, we were reluctant. And here we are now. Now we're in the wrong place. Actually, we're in the right place. Here we are in Radhadesh. We're in the temple. We're in the right place. What better place? Here we can serve the Lord very nicely. Here we can chant the holy names very nicely. And in this way, we can realize what Shukadeva Goswami is describing in all of this detail in this chapter. We may not realize it in the sense that we can understand how it relates in all technicalities to what is described by modern science. We may or may not figure that out. Attempts, of course, are there. But we can understand our relation to the Lord with the help of such a description. However bizarre this description may be, this can help us also. To appreciate, oh, actually, this world is a wonderful place. What I'm seeing of this world, it's only a tiny perception of what more is there. It is a wonderful world, a wonderful world in which there is opportunity for unlimited souls to engage in unlimited service to the Lord. So, it's a nice place. We always hear the material world is a terrible place, but if you read this chapter, it seems like a pretty nice place. But then we say, but it's not like this. <It's>, I don't know what you're talking about here. Well, we're talking about, Shukadeva Goswami is talking about a form of the universe which, if we meditate on, we can remember the Lord. And that's the whole idea of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Questions or comments or thoughts or reflections on Brahma Samhita from Hayagriva. That's your favorite book, isn't it? Do you still chant it? Oh, very good. He's our specialist on the Brahma Samhita. Silence, shanti. Oh, the role of logic. Logical or illogical? Yes, fantastic, huh? Uh, I think the bottom is lower than the top, smaller than the top, isn't it? Yeah, yes. Yes, that seems very illogical, doesn't it? What sort of a mountain is that? Well, one question we may ask ourselves is, what do we understand by mountain? We have a certain understanding. We have, for each of our languages, we have a different word. So in English, we say mountain. What's a mountain? A mountain is that thing that's kind of like this, and you can climb up the mountain. That's a mountain. Whereas what we hear about, read about here, that doesn't fit such a definition. So then we might ask, maybe the original form of mountain is something other than what we experience as mountain. Yes. Like a mushroom. Interesting. Okay. I don't think, strictly speaking, we're dealing with whether or not logic is at issue here. We're more talking about experience. And the description seems to be of something we have no experience of. And because of that, and because of the fantastic numbers, the dimensions described, it seems fantastical, it seems impossible, unlikely. So your question is, what is the place of logic? I think the question is, what is the place of doubt in all of this? Because from our limited understanding, from our limited experience, we don't reach this kind of vision. The application of logic can be made in so many different ways. If you read Sadabhuta's book on the description of the universe in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he applies his reasoning in very interesting ways to see how one might understand this in relation to what we do normally take as reality. And he does, I think, a quite good job. It's I'm sure he would have admitted, speculative. But it's speculative in a good sense, that it's trying to reconcile our experience with something which is beyond experience. One might argue that we shouldn't make such attempt, because, in fact, pratyaksha is limited by definition. We will never be able to understand. And Shastra is meant simply to be understood by hearing and accepting. But, as I suggested, there is a yogic process by which one may understand. And that yogic process essentially involves a kind of austerity which I don't think any of us are ready for. You know, sitting and doing nothing else except meditating on your Susumna column. What are you doing today, Prabhu? I'm meditating on my Susumna column, if you don't mind. hello? That's not our process. So there's pratyaksha, there's anumana, each of which may, to some degree, help, but which we understand have their limitations. Then we have shabda. And shabda, literally it means testament. It means that which somebody has seen. And from that, then we get the idea of Shabda Brahman. It is revealed. So we take it as heard, as Shuka says. That's how it is. I'm just telling you, I don't know myself how this all works, but that's what I've heard. And then we relish it as a yantra, as a form that one can meditate on for controlling the mind to focus on the Lord and the devotees as they worship the Lord. That's what comes to my mind. All right. On that note, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya, Ananta Koti Vaiṣṇava Vrinda ki jaya, Gaura Prema Ānande.